It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're continuing with our World War II special and our look at the exhibit, We Can Do It, at the Heinz History Center. And right now, I am standing next to the oldest known Jeep in existence. It was built in Butler, PA, came off the assembly line for World War II, and here to tell us the story of that and other aspects of this Jeep and the Jeep as part of the war effort is Andy Masick, who is the president and CEO of the Heinz History Center. Andy, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here. And, you know, I've got goosebumps standing next to the oldest Jeep on planet Earth. They call this, collectors do, Gramps, because it is the grandfather of all Jeeps. But it was made in Butler, Pennsylvania in 1940. It's one of the prototypes that was made for the Quartermaster Department after they sent out an RFP, a request for proposals, in 1940 for a vehicle that would replace the horse. The Quartermaster knew that America was in the end going to be in a shooting war in Europe and maybe around the globe.
And this also wasn't World War I, where they actually did use horses. They needed a motorized vehicle.
The U.S. Army was still a horse army at the beginning of World War II, as were most of the armies of the world. Horses and mules pulled the guns and did much of the work. But the United States knew that mechanization was the way to go. So they came up with this RFP that said, we need a vehicle that doesn't weigh any more than a large horse. It has to be able to go anywhere a horse can go. It has to be able to climb a 30-degree grade. It has to be able to pull a gun. And we want you to design and build this miracle car in 49 days. Well, 135 car makers in America got this RFP. Think about that for a minute. There were 135 car makers in America in 1940. And the big guys, GM and Ford and Willis Overland, all said, yeah, we can design something like that, but 49 days, you gotta be nuts. And they couldn't do it. But this little outfit up in Butler, Pennsylvania, was making midget cars on the British Austin patent. They were making speedsters, little tiny cars. And let me tell you, in America in 1940, nobody was buying midget cars. We wanted big American cars, you know, gas-guzzling beasts. And no one was buying these little cars. They were about to declare bankruptcy. They had already purchased the padlocks for the doors for their factory when they got the RFP from the Army. And those engineers up there in Butler stayed up all night at a diner in Butler and literally on a napkin sketched the design for what we now know as the Jeep. And they built this thing, they designed and built it in 48 days, 22 hours. They didn't trailer it to Camp Hollabird, Maryland for the testing. They drove it there because they hadn't had time to break in the engine yet. So they broke it in on the road to Camp Hollabird, Maryland. They were the only ones to show up. And when the Army quartermaster looked over this little vehicle, he wasn't too impressed, but he said, you're the only ones who showed up, so we'll give it a shot. They started out by dropping it off the loading dock, vertical drops, kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. It didn't break. Let's give it a try. They dragged logs with logging chains. They drove it through mud bogs. They jumped it over dirt berms. They pulled guns with it. After a week of testing, this little thing was a bucket of bolts. And that testing major from the Quartermaster Department looked at the engineers from Butler and said, boy, you know that little car you sent us? Well, it's exactly what we're talking about. We need 300,000 of these. When can you deliver?
And could they mass produce them?
They had never built more than 1,000 units in a year's time in the history of their company. But they said, sure, we'll give it a try. And they tried as they might. They built 70 vehicles for further testing. By that time, Willis and Ford were in the race now, too. And they made their own versions of the vehicle the BRC, Bantam Reconnaissance Car, that the Butler people had produced. They were sharing information with the competition, and so there are these three cars now vying for the top spot. Well, it was pretty apparent to the government that the Butler group was not going to be able to keep up with the wartime demand. By this time, the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor, America was in a shooting war, and, well, Bantam ended up as a sop getting the contract for making the little two-wheel trailers that track behind a Jeep. That little car changed the world. Remember, most of the world didn't have paved roads. Most roads in America were not paved in 1940. So four-wheel drive vehicles, what an innovation that was. After the war, Dwight Eisenhower was asked, what's the most important invention to come out of World War II? Without hesitation, he said, the Jeep. When George Marshall, the Army Chief of Staff, the guy who wrote the plan for the invasion of Europe, the guy who invented the Marshall Plan after the war, he said the Jeep was in his top three inventions of World War II as well.
And here we are next to the first one. Let's
Don't you touch that Jeep. That's from the Smithsonian.
I'm so tempted, though.
I know.
Can you touch it?
You can't. I can't touch it without gloves. The thing about this Jeep that's so amazing is it is the oldest one on planet Earth, but it was turned over to the Smithsonian in 1944. While World War II was still raging, someone had the foresight to say, you know what? That little vehicle changed the world. We ought to preserve it. I mean, they didn't even know what the outcome of the war was going to be, but they sent it over to the Smithsonian. The Smithsonian lovingly cared for it. And because the History Center is our Smithsonian affiliate, we get to exhibit it here at the History Center.
So here we are looking at, it's marked USA W-2015330.
Well, it's olive drab, as you would expect a Jeep to be. It's got that channel iron bumper that's so distinctive. Does have that vertical grille element, but it's got a rounded front grille. That's because they cobbled this together with parts for the 1939 Bantam Speedster. The rest of it looks pretty much like a Jeep. It's very Spartan. It's got these canvas colored seats. It's got a spare tire on the back. This whole thing, if we weighed it in, it would come in under 2,000 pounds, under the weight of a large horse. But this became the workhorse of the United States Army and all of the other Allied armies. The Germans only wished they had Jeeps, and when they captured them, they used them. Now, we didn't even talk about where the Jeep name came from. Well, nobody knows for sure. Some people think that it stands for GP, General Purpose Vehicle. Others say it's from the Popeye cartoon. Eugene the Jeep was a mythical, magical character. He could do anything and appear anywhere. And when soldiers were asked during the war, what do you call that thing? They said, well, we don't know. We call it a Jeep. But nobody knew where the name came from. To this day, it's still a mystery.
But it did end up in both the European and Pacific theaters during World War II. And there was an addition that was put on the front of these Jeeps, I believe, on some Pacific islands.
Right after the Normandy invasion in France, Germans actually stretched thin wire, concertina wire, across roads to decapitate American motorcyclists and also Jeep drivers, because the Jeep windshield could fold down. And so innovative Americans welded a piece of angle iron vertically onto that front bumper, and they put a little hook at the top of it, so if there were a wire stretched across a road, it would snap right through it. The Jeep was so adaptable. You could rig it with a fording kit so it could actually drive underwater. You could put 10 guys in this thing. You could load it with ammunition and food and water. It could tow cannons and water buffaloes and those two-wheel carts that were made in Butler. It was the most versatile vehicle the Army had ever seen.
I'm leaning over the hood. Is there still an engine in that thing?
There is an engine. I think it's wired shut, though.
Hold on.
Did we take a look down there, Andy?
I'm putting on my gloves now. Okay, hold on. I've got them on. I'm undoing the spring latch on the front. I'm lifting the hood. And
looky there. There's an engine in there.
It's a four-cylinder flathead engine. It's got a big fat radiator on it and an oil bath air cleaner. So any dust and dirt that went in there would get trapped in the oil, and then the clean air would go into the carburetor and fuel that engine. This little Go Devil engine, they called it, was an amazing feat in itself. A guy named Barney Roos invented it, and it...
You got that lowered back into place.
All right, I'm snapping the spring hook back in place. All right, don't tell anyone we looked under the Smithsonian Jeep.
No one but you and thousands of listeners will know.
Thanks, Paul.
It's an amazing story, the story of the Jeep, and a great way to end our visit to the Heinz History Center and our special look at the end of World War II and this wonderful exhibit, We Can Do It, World War II, which continues until the end of 2015. Andy Masick is the president and CEO of the Heinz History Center. Thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for being here.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh, this special edition of the program on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at wesa.fm. Until next time, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.
The Jeep goes jumping and a-bumping along. Gonna knock you right off your seat. Here we come romping and a-stomping a song. Oh, dig it.